picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching to the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
What is going on, everybody? This is Chris Moxley filling in for Jared Palmgren this week on Chasing the Natty. Jared's taking a brief step back from content while he deals with personal matters, which is why you don't have his sweet Southern voice. He'll be back soon. Jared, buddy, we're thinking about you, man. And let's get the show started. Hopefully you're listening on an early Monday morning or watching us live on YouTube. That is also excellent. We're going to run through the same show that we usually do. You know, same format, players we're concerned about, waiver wire traps, players to target. Let's get it kicked off. You know, I can't do the spiel the same way, of course. I think trying to do the whole thing would be a disservice to Jared, but as always, make sure you're checking out campuscanton.com. Everything we offer there, from college fantasy to Campus Canton to Devi, IDP, etc. We have you covered for everything in the college space. The recruiting podcasts, the recruiting work that we're doing, very cool, very novel stuff. But for college fantasy, we have an excellent team there, and Jared does a great job leading them. And speaking of that team, let's start with the freakout scale. Usually this is a question that's asked to the NIL tier and the Campus Canton Discord. And I asked today, and it held no weight, apparently, because I'm not Jared. So Jared had to come and chime in and say, hey, answer this question, please. So hopefully we got a couple good answers, and we did. But I apparently don't have the authority to request a freakout scale conversation. So of the players we got, and for those who listen every week, you probably have a good understanding of how the scale works. But those who are just tuning in for the first time or checking us out and need a small reminder, one is start with confidence. You're not concerned. This player is just so far off your radar for being concerned, it doesn't really matter. 10 is drop that fool. Most of the players we have today are somewhere in the middle. So not a ton of, it's a really interesting conversation. And so I'm hoping that we get some insight into kind of the thoughts and processes behind how I am doing it. And, Chris K and Nate Marquise, who are both on our CFF team as well. Usually it's three different opinions. So we kind of have a different, perspective and understanding from everybody. So first player up is Drew Mestemaker, North Texas quarterback. He hasn't thrown for 250 yards since week one, now has negative rushing yards in two of his last three games. There's a lot of concern here about what this North Texas offense is currently doing and what it looks like. And then, you know, I think there's a real question about what Mestemaker's upside is rest of season. And I understand why people are concerned. It's a legitimate question, and we just haven't seen the production we expected after a huge week one against Lamar. I put him at a three. I'm the lowest on him. There's concern here for sure. I think the lack of production speaks to that itself, but I think that we're going to get course corrected at some point here soon. The biggest issue that we're having is these are really weird game script games, in my opinion. So this week they kind of had the game in hand against South Alabama, like quite a bit. And it wasn't really all that competitive. Army, they took a big lead and let Army come back, but they were really salting away that game as well. It's 2 weeks of odd game scripts, I think, for this North Texas offense that is more often than not going to play in higher scoring games. However, the reason that I'm not at a one is Skylar Cassidy came over as defense coordinator from Sam Houston last year, and he did a great job with the Bearcats. He's doing a really good job here at North Texas too. And I think the North Texas that we had seen previously, where the defense couldn't stop anybody, is a little bit different. They are getting real stops, and I don't think you're seeing the same shootout potential that you maybe did previously. Is Mestemaker a top 12 quarterback? I don't know that you can rank him there in the status quo. Chris K has him at a five, and I think that's pretty justified as well. I think it's an area of concern, and it's, you know, maybe start looking elsewhere just in case. I think the lack of rushing, which we thought might be there, is driving this as well. And now he's almost exclusively a pocket passer, even though he does have two rushing touchdowns. The negative yardage is becoming a trend. Nate has him at a 4. Nate splits the difference between myself and Chris K. I think we're all kind of not super worried yet, but are starting to, as time goes on, pay more attention to the situation. I don't think he's a player that you can sit, but he is somebody that, you know, maybe as conference play progresses, we don't see the same upside we thought we had 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. Second player is Isaac Brown. And this is a player that I never thought would be on this list in general. Just like a rock solid top 10 pick. Usage is great. Efficiency is great. I mean, this is a player who we had really high hopes for. And I think the fantasy community at large agreed. We saw elite efficiency his first 2 weeks. He was really, really good against subpar competition. Now the last 2 weeks have basically sunk your roster if you're starting him. He had one carry for 1 yard the previous week after not ever being on the injury report. And then, he was hurt. Okay, great. Thanks, Brom. This week he comes back. Say he's healthy. I think he was obviously still a little dinged up. He went 14 for 20 against this Pitt defense, which I think can be run on. If, especially by a player like Brown, I'm at a 5 again, lowest level of concern. I just think we've seen enough of this player to know that he's a quality player. I think the injury is a problem though. And so that's why he's a 5 and not like this. This is a stud running back. So having him at a 5 is probably still pretty bad on the relative scale of things. On the freakout scale, we might need to start looking for other options, because if this injury persists, we're going to have real questions about whether or not we can start Isaac Brown moving forward. And I think we're starting to already have those questions, to be honest. I'm the lowest here at 5. Let's go to the other end. Nate has him at an 8. Doesn't think he's startable currently. Doesn't think that you can put him into your lineup at all until, at least until after the bye, and maybe he gets healthy. It's a player that you can't count on. Obviously, you're not dropping him yet. Like, he did just play, right? It was really inefficient. We think he's still banged up, but he still played. Nate doesn't think you can start him, and I understand that a lot, actually. Again, Chris K splits the difference between us. He's at a 6. Injuries are the concern here. We just don't know to the extent if he can actually rebound from them. I get it. I think it's really scary starting Isaac Brown each week, and I don't know that you can start him in. There's real questions about how we're going to project him moving forward, I think. And some of those concerns that were expressed in the Discord and have been expressed kind of all week about, do I start him? Do I not start him? Obviously, you should have sat him, but hindsight being 2020, I don't know how to approach this player moving forward outside of be really freaking cautious. And in some cases, if you have a better option, he probably ends up on your bench. Final player, and this is a really interesting case study, I think. That's Sutton Smith. Sutton Smith, Memphis running back. What a weird start to the season it's been for the Memphis running backs. Him and Greg Groziers have kind of gone hot hand, on and off approach. Sutton Smith had 7 for 19 last week, or this week. 2 weeks ago, had a great game against Arkansas, which we know everybody can run in Arkansas. But Groziers comes back, huge game, 19 carries, 204 yards, 4 touchdowns to Sutton Smith's 19 yards. So we have a problem here, which is, I don't know that there's an RB1 at Memphis that could be relied on in general. And if there is an RB1 that could be relied on in general, I'm not sure it's Sutton Smith. So I think your upside for Smith is he gets the hot hand and Silverfield runs with him for the whole game and you see a huge game, because we know where Memphis produces running backs. I don't know that you can plug him into your lineup either if we know that the downside is 19 yards. I think that's a really realistic and outcome and possibility, even in a matchup where we thought, you know, both could be potentially productive. We're all at 7 here. I don't believe that he's startable, at least for the foreseeable future, until we have a better understanding of if he's truly the RB2 here. I think it's more of a RB1A, 1B situation, but that doesn't help us for fantasy if we know that the floor is as low as it is. And I think there's a realistic outcome it could be. they're both been really efficient on the year. Both are averaging more 7 yards per carry. You know, some games are really inefficient like this one, but DeRozier's is averaging slightly higher, 8.6, and, you know, Sun Smith's barely above 7, but still both productive, efficient backs. So I think at their worst case scenario for Smith is a player you have to hold, because DeRozier's has dealt with injuries a little bit in the past, and we know that he's basically an RB1 when, or at least a top 15, 20 RB when he's healthy and he has the backup to himself. And like that can legitimately come kind of at any point. So sit him. I don't think you can drop him. He needs to be rostered in almost all formats. It would be hard to find one where he isn't. There were a couple other options this week, but I think those are what people are asking a lot of questions about. And let's move to waiver wire traps. I personally felt this week that there was a lot of performances that were expected, like not a ton of unexpected players emerging or having like the game of their life, which is usually how this segment is reserved for. There are a handful, and I think we will touch on those, but overall, I think this was one of the weeks that felt like it was the most predictable in terms of touch share, touch allocation, player usage, player roles. And so it was somewhat difficult to pull together players that I think someone would target on the waiver wire and say, okay, this is obviously wrong, or we need to pay more attention, or you know, any variable of that. So let's start with Ben Gulbranson. I had to put him on here. He threw for 440 yards, and he's been pretty good in back-to-back weeks. It's Ben Gulbranson, though. Like, that should kind of tell you how to approach the situation. Stanford's playing better football. They absolutely are, and I think you're having two really solid games from him, and especially this one where, you know, San Jose's defense is terrible, and I think he took advantage. He's a veteran quarterback who can win you football games and certainly manage the heck out of a game. I don't think that means you have to pick him up. It certainly does. He's been in college for 8 years. He's a PhD by now. I don't think there is a world where you are comfortably, reliably starting Gulbranson and the Stanford passing attack in general. We will talk about receiver on this team a little bit later, but for the most part, it's just an avoid situation. Don't fall for the trap. Second one is Lavelle Wright, running back at Western Kentucky. This is purely a player who's being propped up by touchdowns, two in back-to-back weeks. He has 33 snaps on the entire season. Yeah, he's getting you 15, 16, 17 points in two straight, and it may look like, you know, sorting by fantasy points, that this is a player who can be relied on. It's an offense that doesn't really run the ball effectively in general, and Wright is not a big part of the offense outside of like goal line touch situations. It just doesn't really make sense. He's a purely propped up by touchdown performance. Completely avoid, wouldn't even touch him. And the two back-to-back weeks, I think, could get people thinking there's maybe more consistency here. There's not. Jordan Fuller, the running back at James Madison. You know, this was a player I was kind of interested in preseason, because he did come over from Holy Cross, which is kind of a lot of where the staff is. Staff was previously Bob Chesney, Holy Cross, Matthew Sluka, Holy Cross, etc. You know, he basically had the same number of carries as James Wayne Knight this week. He's still the two here, and while he was really good and had a really strong week, it's mostly limited runs and limited touches. And I think what you saw today was more of a product of game script than it was the ability to actually go in and differentiate himself as a lead rusher. They just run the ball so much when they're up, and it's an offense that is really predicated around the run. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him get 12, 13, 14, sometimes touches. You can't rely on 20 points though, from a fantasy perspective. I don't really see that as a long-term outcome here. Fourth is Trent Howland. I don't know what the heck is happening at Oklahoma State. Rodney Fields, who we thought maybe could have emerged last week as the primary back, where was he? You know, it was a concerning performance from him. Trent Howland comes in and has 16 carries, but has almost no usage all year. Fields didn't really get the run we were expecting overall. I tend to think that Fields is still the guy. But it is a little weird that we saw essentially nothing from him after his big breakout game. I don't think that means you can go and pick up Howland, because at best, this is like a rotating running back by committee situation. And at worst, I don't think the job is Howland's, period. So this is just a situation that we need to be avoiding moving forward. Final player here is one who got a lot of run, and it's similar to the Ben Gabranson question, which is how much can we actually trust what's going on here, and like that it's actually a trend moving forward. And that's running back Caleb Kamafale at Northwestern. He had 27 rush attempts. Joe Hyman, the backup, had 8. So obviously, like, he's taking over the role as the true RB1. That doesn't mean anything to me at Northwestern, to be honest. I understand that the production can be there on some weeks, but overall, how can you trust Northwestern's offense in general? It's not good enough, and they're not going to play UCLA, who everybody can score against week in, week out. So, you know, Kamafale is not a player that I think we can rely on. And if you can't find a way to put him into your lineup, let somebody else pick him up and assume that the usage is going to be good enough to get the job done for them, and hopefully get like 20 yards on a weekly basis, and it's not in your lineup. Those are the traps. Like I said earlier, I really do think that this was a week where we saw a lot of expected performances and not a ton of unexpected ones, which is, I think we're getting to the part where everybody kind of understands the role in conference play for the majority of players throughout college football, including, you know, G5 players are starting to emerge and solidify their roles. And I think this week was a big reflection of that. Week 6, who are we targeting on the waiver wire? I'm going to give you some honorable mentions as well at these positions, but, you know, there are still players here that I think should be owned or rostered that continue to not get picked up. They're still falling below this 30% threshold. I don't understand it, but they're available. If they're available in your league, go on at them. Start at the quarterback position. Chandler Morris. He's like a top 5 quarterback. What are we doing here? 26% owned. Virginia's offense is just working. They are able to score with a lot of teams. And I don't know the Florida State's defense is all that good, but at this point, we're seeing Morris consistently run effectively and pass effectively. And I think at this point, he needs to be rostered. Whether or not you want to start him, we can have a different conversation, but this is a player that needs to be on teams, period. And the fact that he's only 26% owned is ludicrous. Not much more to say here. I know Jared talked about him last week as well, so we don't need to go into a total deep dive. I just imploring you to add Morris, which is so weird. Feels very weird saying that, considering he's been in college forever as well. Marshall quarterback Carlos Del Rio Wilson is a player that I think falls in kind of a similar boat. He's 3% owned, but 26 points, 38 points, 33 points in the last 3 games. After his terrible game against Georgia week 1, but it's his Marshall versus Georgia. Like, I obviously, he's getting like 50, 80 yards on the ground, adds touchdown ability on the ground. He is a pretty classic example of a like high end recruit drops down and maybe we have something here. The rushing floor really, really helps. And I think you're seeing Marshall have to throw quite a bit. And so the game script is really making it so that Del Rio Wilson has the ball in his hands a lot and isn't just able to hand it off. And they have a great running back who we'll bring up as well, but he and Allen are really the engine that drives this team. And I think that this is a player who in conference play can get you like 25 points a week. It's been pretty consistent now since that Georgia game. And I think now we can finally start turning the page and thinking that some of this might be for real. And so that's a exciting, interesting guy who's only 3% owned, and I'm pretty sure he's not going to be a big target again this week. third quarterback, Air Force quarterback Liam Sarska. Izarka, I believe it's pronounced. They went into the season with Josh Johnson, who I just don't think has it. We saw him last year, and he didn't have it. So this tells me that they were pretty quick to make this switch, and I think it's working out really well. We saw him come in game one, so this is not a player who is a surprise. He's not terrible at football, which is kind of all you want from a service academy quarterback. Like, they don't have to be great. They just have to figure out how to run the system. And while the system is being run to like a extreme efficacy currently, like, he attempted 12 passes this week for 278 yards and the week before 18 for 248. Like, that's not going to happen every week, especially for a service academy. But he has 250 yards on the ground in the last 2 weeks combined. So this is a player who's just truly operating the offense to peak efficiency. And I know the passing won't be there most weeks, not to that same extent at least, but the rushing certainly will be. So that's a high floor player who, you know, now he's owned in 8% of leagues. It's going up, you know, after each successful outing. But the big thing for Air Force, and we saw this when they got curb stomped by Hawaii, which Hawaii curb stomps nobody, so concerned. They have one of the worst defenses in the country, like, full stop, bar none. So, yeah, they might have to pass more. The ball will be in his hands for dropbacks, period, whether or not that's, you know, designed runs and then, you know, scrambles. And you know, there's a lot of opportunity here for the quarterback, even if it's a service academy, to put up more yardage than traditionally when they can just run the clock. And they don't have that luxury the same way with how their defense is currently playing, because they've allowed a lot of points to Boise State and Hawaii in back-to-back weeks. Two honorable mentions, and Nick Minicucci probably should have been somewhere above, maybe, but again, this is already a player that Jerry talked about. Delaware was on bye this week, so he probably, if he snuck through, you have an opportunity to grab him. I think that this Delaware offense is a lot better than we expected, and Minicucci's a runner, but not like, he's not going to give you like 50, 60 yards on the ground, but he does do goal line quarterback rushing. And that's, if he's got touchdown potential, that'll deliver. He's played well too against some power four competition like Colorado. So this is a guy who I think could do really well in Conference USA this year. I think we have a player who might thrive in conference matchups. The other player, and this is a player that I've kind of liked for a while, it's Bishop Davenport, South Alabama quarterback, under 15% ownership. I think there's better days ahead here. You know, he's dropping back 30 plus times and has a 50 to 60 rush upside each week. You know, in conference play, I think, again, this is a player who is going to give you probably a more of a floor. I don't know that the ceiling is there, but if you need a quarterback, I think you can do a lot worse than him on the waiver wire this week. Let's go to running backs. And last week, there was a reason to be concerned about what Caleb Hawkins' usage was. North Texas running back, freshman. He came in out of nowhere and had a great game. And when you come out of nowhere and have 37 points, it's a reason to be concerned, and I think we're a little hesitant. Really, everybody was. He's only owned 10% of leagues. Totally fair. Comes out and drops 42 this week. So, like, this is, I think, a guy who's the real deal. I think he's probably the top ad, in my opinion, this week. You're looking at a player who is getting involved in the receiving game, and he's been highly efficient. I don't know that that's going to continue, but I also don't expect 40 points to continue anyway. He's been much better than McGill. He's averaging over 8 yards per carry, and McGill's averaging like under 4, right? So we thought this was Mackenzie McGill's job. I don't know that that's true anymore. I think we've seen the keys kind of be handed over to Hawkins. And when we talked about Mestemaker in the beginning, we were talking about, you know, Scott Cassidy came in and this defense is actually playing okay. If we're concerned about Mestemaker, then we probably should be bumping up Hawkins quite a bit. And I think that this is a player who we can potentially be looking out for 20 touches weekly. He's seeing that workload now, and I think the game script has helped a bit, but you know, McGill's still part of this rushing attack and he's not doing well. I think his role continues to shrink. even if he had, you know, 13 carries this week to Hawkins 16, that those numbers are going to diverge in different directions. So next week it might be 20 and 9 or something of that nature. I think Hawkins is the guy. I expect him to be added in quite a few leagues. A player that was on the list last week who he should be added everywhere, I think, at this point. This is the Ball State running back, Quai Ashley. He's obviously the focal point of the rushing attack, and the whole offense is a rushing attack anyway with Kelly at quarterback. But he's also involved in the receiving game. He gets a lot of work out of the backfield as a receiver on some of these screens, and he's explosive enough to take them, especially against MAC competition. He had 21 total touches this week against UConn. He's going to be in the 20-touch range most every week, and he's probably the best player they have on offense. I think you're looking at, well, they have a good receiver too, which we'll touch on. But I think you're looking at a player who 20-touch maxion upside, knowing how that conference looks right now and knowing what the defenses are going to be like, I like Quai Ashley quite a bit, and he's only owned in 12% of leagues. I hate reiterating points because I think Jerry did a great job last week on some of these players. But like Michael Allen's got to be owned, right? Like this is a clear RB1 for Marshall, and he also had 5 receptions as well this week. Like now he's getting heavily involved in the passing game. He's already getting like 20 touches on the ground. Like 25 touches a game is going to be a very realistic outcome for this offense that wants to run the ball between him and Del'Rio Wilson. I think the offense is better than we've assumed, and I think he's a huge beneficiary in that moving forward. He's only 1% of leagues, by the way, so he's probably available for you. Ja'Kyle Middlebrook, Middle Tennessee State. His usage to begin the season was not exactly what we wanted, but he's now averaging 4 receptions a game, and he saw 20 attempts on the ground versus Kennesaw State. I think he's assumed the lion's share of this backfield over the likes of Ricky Hunt, who had like 3 carries this week. Again, he was a player from preseason that we liked, and now we're entering conference play, and we're seeing clarity on these backfields, and we're seeing kind of what the situations are. Again, they played Kennesaw State. I think Middlebrook is going to be a player who's very involved, especially in the receiving game. 18 catches already on the season is really, really impressive stuff. And so I think you're going to see a player who gives you, especially in PPR leagues, like quite a high floor. And I think the ceiling is there to break off runs and break off receptions. Even though I really, really hate the Middle Tennessee offense, I do think Middlebrook is just such a large, such a large portion of what the offense is trying to do. Honorable mentions, and I'm having a tough time figuring out what exactly to do with this player, and that's Nate Shepherd from Duke. I thought there would be more of a split between him and Anderson Castle, and I was a little bit, I don't say shocked, but I was more surprised maybe than I would have been otherwise at looking at the box score yesterday when Shepherd had 15 and Castle had 10. And I was like, okay, that's a relatively, you know, fine split. I don't think that's crazy. Shepherd ran for 168 on 15 carries and 2 touchdowns, 11.2 yards per carry. Anderson averaged 4.2 yards per carry, also had a touchdown. I think Shepherd may have elevated himself into like a feature back role. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves in terms of saying that he's a must add, absolutely need to add him, which is why he ends up in the, you know, honorable mention section. But I'm pretty impressed with the freshman so far, and to come in and make this impact as quickly as he had. He's a class of 2025 player. It's pretty impressive, and I think we might be looking at a player who, like Hawkins, is, you know, young but assuming a big role because they're the best player on this offense. And I think that's kind of how we might need to view Shepherd moving forward. Again, the split was 15 to 10, so I don't know that it's going to continue like that. But we have one data point now, and it's certainly worth paying attention to. If you're in a CFF Dynasty League and he's unowned, he's like a must pickup, right? So league format dependent. Other audible mention, and this was a player who actually was quite a hot topic on the waiver show that Jared does live on Wednesdays. Tre'Quan Jones, Old Dominion running back. He's the RB1. You know, Mekhi James and Ketrevion Hartgrove, they combined for 6 carries to Jones' 16. And now Jones didn't have as a productive week as he had previously, obviously 3 touchdowns. But I think you're now seeing a player who's getting a lot of usage. And because he didn't have a monster fantasy week this week, he's probably going to slide under the radar. I think he's a player that you almost have to be looking at picking up because of how effective this Old Dominion offense has been thus far. And that surprised me a little bit. But excuse me, he had 101 yards against Virginia Tech, and then he had 89 yards against Liberty. Was he super efficient in both? Yeah, he was super efficient in both. 7.8 yards per carry, 5.6 yards per carry. NC Central was a little bit different. He had 5 carries for 163 yards, so we couldn't really make determinations yet, I felt like. Now I feel like we can. He's just seizing the role, and he doesn't really do a lot of receiving work. He only has 2 receptions on the season, but this hit the combination in the backfield with Colton Joseph can be pretty deadly, I think, especially as they move into conference play a little bit more. He was pretty effective against Liberty, and I don't think much of Liberty, but it is good to see that there is productivity here, and we know that he's explosive. We've seen him break off these big runs in the past. I think the best thing that happened is he didn't score a touchdown this week. That gives you upside into potentially adding him on waivers. Again, more in the honorable mentions section, because I don't know that the ceiling is massive on a week-to-week basis, but he is somebody that I am personally adding in leagues. Receivers. There's a lot of really interesting names here, and a lot of them are pretty lowly owned. Let's start with FAU wide receiver Jayshon Platt. Back-to-back 7 target weeks, and then explodes this week for 15 targets, 9 receptions, 100 yards. He's operating as the primary outside wide receiver for this offense that wants to chuck it like 45 times a game. We know Easton Messer is the slot guy. Like, he is already a known commodity, but I think Platt is the one who's emerged on the outside as the wide receiver too. 100% route participation this week when he was kind of, he'd been like closer to like 85 on the season. So now we're seeing, I think, who the wide receiver 2 here is, and there's more than enough passing production in this offense to have it go around. And FAU's defense is really terrible. That tells me that they're going to be in shootouts more often than not. And I think there are more double digit target games ahead than there are 5-6 target games ahead for Jayshon Platt. And I think as well with Platt, you're looking at another player who didn't have a touchdown. So 19 fantasy points is really good, but when it could have been 25, he probably is more popular on the waiver wire than not. And so I think this is a player you might be able to sneak in for maybe a low fab bid. But I think he's somebody that needs to be owned. He's only owned in 1% of leagues. Miami of Ohio's explosive offense, which, what are we doing with Henry Hessen under center? It doesn't make a lot of sense, but they have 150-pound soaking wet Cam Perry, who has 3 straight 100-yard games. What? It's... He and Henry Hessen have a rapport, and the volume is not there. They don't pass enough to have the volume be there weekly. But his first 200-yard games came against Rutgers and UNLV. Like, UNLV's defense is suspect, and so is Rutgers, but those are quality opponents. They aren't that different from what he's going to be playing in the MAC. It is a little concerning that the production isn't there, right? Like, he's not going to have a double-digit target game, but he is really effective. And he's, like I said, he's tiny, but these are the type of players who can succeed and excel outside of power conferences. And I think you're seeing a player like Cam Perry, who, like I said, 150 pounds soaking wet. Oh, he's listed at 168. There's no way. I think he's a lot closer to that smaller end. Anyway, 4 or 5 catches a game, potential to break a huge play every week. He's probably a preferable player in best ball, and I know that most best ball leagues don't have open waivers, but I do think he's worth stashing at the end of your roster. I know it was Lindenwood he had the 2 touchdowns against, but he had 122 and 108 in 2 previous weeks. This is a player that I'm at least taking a look at, and he's, again, rostered in 2% of leagues. We're just doing all Marshall, apparently. I went back and forth on including him as an honorable mention and not, and I think I ended up including him here because I do think that there's potential for the Marshall offense to kind of take off. And that player is DeMarcus Lacy. Now, I get the lack of production to this week, and he wasn't a full-time starter until this week, which maybe this is a waiver wire trap. Maybe I'm falling for the trap. Very possible. He stepped into a big role and seized it. And he also gets rushing work. This is a player that the offense really wants to feature. And I think moving forward, you're going to see significant production from Lacy. I can't say it's always going to be 100 yards and a touchdown like we saw this week, but I do think that this is the player who is emerging as a wide receiver one for a Marshall offense that is honestly, like I said earlier, better than we thought it would be. His 12 targets were a lot, and I don't know that we can get double digits every week, but he adds 6, 4, and 5, even if the production wasn't there previously. Like, this is not a player who was not being utilized. He was just not seeing a full complement of snaps. Now he is, and that seems like a very conscious decision by the coaching staff to make him a feature part of the offense. Again, he has a bunch of rush attempts. Like, we know that this is a guy who is heavily involved, heavily utilized. I think when they saw his 116-yard game last week against Middle Tennessee, they said, okay, open the offense up, get him running a full complement of routes. Pays off in a big way against Louisiana Lafayette. 10 receptions, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns. I think we're seeing a player really emerge here. And he's rostered in 0% of leagues. So, again, maybe another player you can sneak through. I think he's more legit than not legit. Again, player that was already brought up. We know who the Memphis wide receiver one is, and that's Cortez Brown. Came over from Nevada. Joins up with Brendan Lewis. There's familiarity already there. Back-to-back 100-yard weeks. 9 targets, 8 targets, respectively. He was a big name in the offseason. This is not a player who's emerged out of nowhere. I tend to think that this is real. Only rostered in 4% of leagues. I like what I've seen from the Memphis offense and Brendan Lewis, which is surprising coming from me. I don't like the player very much, but I've been impressed. And again, he's already been mentioned before. This is not a surprise name. A couple of honorable mentions, and you know, the last few have gone back and forth between honorable and not, more likely. Trying to give you names that I think are a little bit off the beaten path more than not, that I think give you some long-term production. Let's go with, I think this is going to get asked quite a bit, and so I think I need to address it. I put him in the honorable mentions and not the fake, you know, not a trap category player. CJ Williams, wide receiver, Stanford. The offense is playing okay, like I said earlier, with Ben Gilbranson. He has 13 targets and 19 targets in back-to-back weeks. I just don't know if you can really trust them moving forward. They played San Jose State, and they have a terrible defense. I find it hard to believe that there's a player here that I can start on a weekly basis, but he does need to be mentioned because he has 32 targets in the last 2 weeks. Simple as that. Another player that was mentioned last week, and I think we're at the point where we need to be seriously looking at picking him up, is that's Brady Pagan, the Utah State wide receiver. 12 targets last week. He's at least 6 in every single game. If the offense is going to pass as much as they do, and they will, and be as creative as they are with their usage here, I think Pagan is a nice add moving forward. Sorry, I have a sip of water. He's only rostered 10% of leagues, too, so this is a player who's pretty widely available. Another honorable mention, I don't really know where we stand with this player, to be honest, because the offense is so variable on a week-to-week basis. I thought they were left for dead, and then they come out and score like almost 50 points on Air Force. That's Hawaii. Hawaii receiver Jackson Harris is the primary guy, and I think he's the wide receiver one at Hawaii. I mean, Ophelia Ashok gets like 13 targets a game for like 5 yards, so we're looking at a player who actually has a role downfield that scores fantasy points. Hawaii's defense is bad. I think they're going to be involved in shootouts again more often than not. If he's unowned, I think he's worth picking back up or picking up. If someone dropped him, I think he's worth picking back up because of the production. Player that I'm watching kind of closely before we move to tight ends, another Old Dominion player, actually, that's wide receiver Corey Thomas. He has 80 plus yards in three straight games, and he's seeing a pretty healthy 26% target share across the whole team and 34% among receivers. This is a player who I think in conference play might, like, there could be 580 and one upside. And you know, that's doesn't sound sexy when we're talking about like 15, 16 points, but that's not a bad floor play. And I'm very intrigued by what the Old Dominion offense has been able to do thus far. They've moved the ball quite well. They were able to last year as well, Colton Joseph, but I feel like they've taken a small step, and I don't really like relying on Colton Joseph, the passer, but it just seems to me that we've gotten to this point with Corey Thomas where he's consistently being relied on in the passing game. He's obviously the wide receiver one here, and the offense is passing, especially passing better than at least I personally anticipated when the season started, knowing what I know about Colton Joseph. He has not had a double-digit target game, which is why he's more of a player I'm keeping an eye on. But 6-6-9 in the last three, over 83 yards in each one. And he probably is going to get more attention this week because he had two touchdowns. But definitely a player that, you know, if you're in a deeper league, I would look at adding pretty aggressively. Tight end, so I'll give you one name. There were some good names last week. I think Mason Minnie was a good call out. He's rostered in quite a few leagues now. Joshua Long, same story. He's pretty heavily involved in an Eastern Michigan offense that isn't very good. But I mean, if you're gonna get a tight end, see, I have a tight end who has like 6-7 targets a game, it's hard, you know, kind of hard to beat. I'm going with Gavin Harris in New Mexico State. He's averaging a little under 50 yards a game. The offense is better, I think, than what we thought it would be coming into the season, and the schedule is really easy as well. I like the quarterback, Jack Lane, quite a bit. I think he can do enough to elevate players in this room. Harris has had games of 7, 8, 5, and 4 targets. 7, 8 most recently, 5, and 4 previously. I think he's becoming more of a focal point in this offense. I think you're looking at, again, a player who, if things break very right, gives you a touchdown in like 60 yards. If things break wrong, I still think you're looking at a high floor type player who, you know, his last 4 weeks in terms of fantasy points, 7.4, 12.4, 8.2, 15.7. For tight end, that is more than good enough, even if the yardage isn't there. So sorry, I did my math wrong. He is averaging actually 57 yards a game, and for a tight end, that'll do it. That, especially with his target usage, interception usage, I think you're looking at a player who, he had the big breakout against New Mexico, going 6 for 97, but I have a feeling he still will be very lowly rostered this week. And given he's only on 1% of teams, I think you're probably able to slip him in if you are really desperate for tight end help. So that'll be the end of the show. I don't know how Jared does this every week. Quite a bit of talking and needing water, but this has been Chasing the Natty. I have enjoyed filling in for Jared. You can find me and everything I do at Campus Can. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Moxley 19, and have a good time, y'all. And hopefully next time we chat, it'll be under better circumstances.